Hi guys, we are back on Lead Her Shift. And of course, you know, we are talking to dynamic women from around the world. And I'm here with Koss, who is going to share so much about her journey and her perspective, especially on leadership, the challenges she's had, but also the triumphs, because we all like to hear about those wins, right? And I'm going to turn over to her to share a little bit about who she is, what she's been up to, and then we'll delve a little deeper into the leadership side of her. So talk to me, Koss. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
All right, thank you so much, Alien. So I'm a multi-passionate, conscious entrepreneur. So multi-passionate is a term that I took from Marie Forleo because I like
Okay.
to do a lot of things. And I'm an intentional living coach. I'm also a content creator. I'm an English coach. Like I help people from non-native countries with their English conversation and writing. And I'm a copywriter.
Oh,
So I do
wow.
all of these things, and I'm too much into sustainability and slow living. So that is what I ardently promote on my channels and networks and social media.
Nice. So talk to me about intentional living coach. What does that even mean? Like, to the person who may not even understand what that means, what is it that you exactly do?
So intentional living is basically, so I will give you a background how I came up with this entire idea.
Yeah.
I started a channel, I think last year in January when I returned from a big trip from Bali. And on the trip that I decided that I'm going to start a zero waste channel on
Okay.
Instagram and see and document my journey. So I started documenting it. I got really into it. And I grew this entire community that people actually started reaching out to me. But there was an entire big gap. While I was so much into sustainable living, promoting it, I became an expert into zero waste and, you know, sustainable category. But there was a big gap. Like I
Right.
saw people being aware of the problems that our climate is facing, but they're not implementing anything. So
Right.
I wanted to get to know where exactly is the gap. And in that gap, I figured out that people are not being intentional with themselves. Like you go to a job that you hate, or you are living at a place that you hate, and you know there's so much of anger and rage. It's all because you're not being intentional with your life. And because you're not happy, you're content with your life, you don't want to do anything. You think that
Right.
the environment is a separate part of you. You're not a part of it. But like the entire thing is that you are a part of Earth. It's not separate from you. And taking care of it is not out of convenience. So
Right.
I realized that instead of promoting sustainability, I should start helping people in being, I call it a flow. So like being with your flow, like so
Oh.
like listening to your heart. So if I can help people be in tune with their flow, like listening to their heart, that is like that's my job is done. Then I don't have to tell them, oh, take care of the environment. Oh, you know, we have a safer relationship. They will like go massive in all the areas of life. So that's what I do. Like in intentional living, I help people to become in tune with themselves and with the environment. So I pick a particular area that they are having trouble with. So it could be work or relationship or creativity. So currently I'm working with a client who's working with work. Like she is working at a job that she doesn't like. And then she wants to do this and other things. So I'm helping her get over her limiting beliefs and channel it through, you know, finally stepping into her ideal self. So basically I'm helping her to listen to her heart more.
Listen to your heart more. That is amazing. You know, when we think about intentional, just being intentional, we don't often think about how does that connect to your heartbeat? How does that connect to you personally, right? How did you find this? Like, what was the steps or the process that led you to this specifically? I'm sure you have a myriad of experience in different fields, and I'm interested to see what led you to this specifically.
So do you want to, do you
Yeah,
me
go
describe
back. Let's
it?
hear the story.
All right, then. I think I talk a lot, so
I'll jump in. I'll jump in at some point. But tell me about the story of what led you here.
Okay, so it's a long story. Like, I have been working as a copywriter or journalist for about 6 to 7 years. And I was working with advertising agency, a lot of online newspapers. And I'm a very creative person. I really like the art of writing, the entire craft and brainstorming. The only thing that I did not like is, you know, extensive working hours and no intention. Like, every day you have another job to do. You're not even pausing to look around. So I think that was an exhaustion for me. And plus, I also, like, there were a couple of things that bothered me. Like, every time I jump a job, for the first 3 months, I would be like super excited. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna, like, you know, take all the project. And I think I'm a natural leader. So I would, like, take all the initiatives. And after 3 months, it will be so monotonous and I will get bored. And it was so weird because everybody was, like, so into what they were doing. They weren't taking themselves out and seeing, like, what they are doing with their lives. But I was like, you know, there was this unsatisfaction in my heart. And I'm like, something is wrong. I'm not here. This is not me. So I still remember it was Thursday afternoon, after lunchtime, 4 p.m. And I was looking at this guy who was a senior copywriter. And if I would have stayed in the job, I would have taken his position. I would have gotten, like, a bigger salary package. And I saw his life because he had an operation. Mm-hmm. He couldn't take a leave for more than a week. Like, doctor asked him to take a 1 month's leave. But because he had so much work, he couldn't take a leave. And I'm like, that is not my next life, you know? That is not where I want to be.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things, because I really like traveling and I'm a minimalist. So whatever money I was earning, I was saving all of it because I don't spend a lot of money.
Right.
And when I want to travel, then I cannot travel because they won't give me vacation days off. And I was miserable, you know, because I really like traveling. And another thing was my integrity. Like, I really like to live value-based living.
Right.
So there will be brands that... So, for example, I'm from India, and India, a fair skin is very promoted, maybe because of colonialism or something. And there were brands that are promoting this social taboo. And I have to write copy on it. And it used to make me feel so miserable that I don't want to promote this. And yet I'm writing about fair skin, right?
Mm.
And so all of it contributed me to quitting my job.
Right.
I quit my job in 2018 and I had no, I did not know where to go and how to go. I had no plans, but I was very good with marketing and I was very good with writing.
Right.
So I'm like, I'll figure out. So I went traveling. That was my first thing that I do after quitting my job.
Nice.
And then I came back and I was like, I need to do something for, like, my sustenance. So my sister, my cousin, she lives in Japan and she's like, you know, you can teach English online. So I gave an interview, I got selected, and I still remember, like, I got paid about $1.44 for first 25 minutes of the class.
Sorry, what? Like,
$1.4.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I went from, like, this big copywriting package to earning $1.4.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I was like, I used to feel like I'm a big shot copywriter, and now I'm teaching. And, you know, for first 6 months, I was very unhappy, but I was still showing up until I was figuring out. And it was an online job. But then I changed my mindset. I was like, maybe this is the first step to be greater good in my life. And that first step, and then that was, I think, one of the easiest jobs. Basically, I was just getting paid to know English.
So
I just had to show up. There was no lesson plan. I just have to talk to Japanese and Koreans in English. And we would talk about travel. So I got to know everything about travel and everything about Japan. And I have so many friends from Korea and Japan now.
Nice.
So after that teaching, I figured out, okay, now I have a remote job, but I still need to, like, you know, I need to do something more. So I started this another company in digital marketing, but mm-hmm. that did not work because I was following the same fundamentals as my previous corporate job. So I had to dissolve. I burned out and I was hustling every day, all day, because I had two jobs at that. And then finally, I went to Bali for 2 months. There I did volunteering.
Nice.
I did volunteering. And then I got an idea, what if I go back and, you know, start this zero waste channel? That's when everything changed. I came right. back, started my Instagram channel, and I started attracting a lot of people on my channel. And then I'm like, okay, during that time I was working very much on my mindset as well. I'm like, I realized like everything is a mindset, you know, once you shift your perspective, then everything happens. Like everything is a byproduct of your mindset.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I came across Vanessa Lau, and she's a business coach, and I was following her for 6 months. And she makes YouTube videos and Instagram. She has a large following, and she helps people how to coach other people. So right. she had this course for $900. And that time I was earning, I told you, right, $1.8. And I was like, there's no way I would be able to afford her course, okay? But I don't know, since I've worked so much on my mind and my limiting patterns, that money scarcity just went away. And I'm like, what if I just buy it from credit card? And I bought it from credit card, and I paid off in 3 months. For some reason, all the projects came together. And that course led me to become an intentional living coach. Because she gave me a framework to, like, earlier I had an idea of what I wanted to do, because I wanted to teach people, become in tune with themselves. I wanted to teach them sustainability, minimalism, experience-based living, listening to your heart. But I don't know how I can package it into one. And then when I took the course, she gave me a framework, and now I just need to fit. I just need to fill in the frame. That's all.
This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And why I say that is because sometimes it takes us a few steps to get to the right place in our journey, right? And what I heard from you is that, you know, you can't be, or you shouldn't be, in a job or in a career that isn't serving your life, right? You shouldn't let a salary dictate how you live, essentially, right? And oftentimes, you know, no matter whether we are entrepreneurs or in a major career, we tend to let that paycheck or that next payment or that next client almost dictate what we do and how we live, right? Yeah. And it isn't really serving us or making us as happy as we would love ourselves to be. Because, you know, to be fair, being an entrepreneur isn't easy, you know, and you do... Arguably, you do double or triple the amount of hours that any employee would do. But it's not about the time. Sometimes it's not even about the amount of money, because I think you made that distinctively clear. It's more about, how is it serving me? How happy am I? Am I settled and feeling good about the next project or the next task, you know? And, I think that's so interesting, like how you've led through different paths to get to where you are right now. But of all of that, and I keep hearing this from time to time with so many different women and different professionals I speak to, it starts with your mind. And if your mind isn't right, everything else isn't going to fall into place. So tell me about what your thoughts are on success. Like, what does success mean to you? Because with all of this, there must be certain pinnacles that you have in terms of where you see success and how do you see it for yourself. Like, what does success mean to you?
I think for the longest time, I thought success is getting results, you know, like earning that much amount or getting that much revenue, getting those many clients. But recently, I've realized that success is actually getting to do what you love and enjoying the process, and not not thinking about the results, because results is anyway, it's going to come. So I think success for me is doing something, and not just for yourself, but for the greater good of your community, for people in the world,
right,
for everyone, and enjoying the process. That's what the term means for me.
In working with different clients and in working as an intentional coach, right? How is it that you start off that conversation or that relationship? You know, because oftentimes I think persons have a misconception of what a coach is or could be to them. There's somewhat of an unsurety as to whether persons might need one. And I kind of want to help persons to understand the importance. I mean, I'm a coach and I have a coach, right? Because I also think it's important that, you know, you have someone who's keeping you accountable and who's there to kind of help you just as much as you would help others. So my question to you is, how do you even start off those relationships and that client to coach relationship? What is the process for you?
The process for me is that I'm still at the beta state, so I haven't launched my paid program yet.
Right.
So I'm still testing my program. So what I start is I start with market research. So I send out like these survey forms, and there are like particular questions. And if the person, my ideal client, I call it, fills in those questions, I know that this is the shortlist.
Right.
So if like 10 people have filled the form, I guess 4 of them would be like, you know, will fill those questions. And I will just like, you know, personally, I email them and then we have like a call like this. Most of the times, like it turns out to be like they hiring me as a coach. And this is how the process works mostly for me.
How different has this been from being a journalist, from being engulfed in the marketing and digital space? Like, how has there been any difference? Like, how have you seen maybe a shift in what you were doing before versus now?
I think what I was doing was I was an employee, you know, so I had a person to accountable to. Like, that person, it was like they would give me homework, like I was a student. I just have to finish homework, I give it to them, and that's done. Now I'm a coach, so I give the homework. So it's like the entire table has turned. And I think, yes, it is more like a flow. Like, I feel like I need to know a lot of things to help other persons. So it's helping me too, because I'm reading more now to help my clients.
Wow,
so I think
okay.
That is what happened. Because I feel like since the time I have become an entrepreneur, like my employee life was 6-7 years. And I have just learned, okay, whatever was required for me to learn, like basic 8-hour working and what. But since last 2 years, I have learned like 8 years of my life, you know, because I've learned so much and I've gained so much of knowledge in every area of my life.
Wow. Now, I want to make that distinction that there's a number of things that I keep, like, I'm kind of mulling over based on your responses. But one of the things I want to make the distinction on is that being an employee isn't a bad thing. Right? And being an entrepreneur isn't a bad thing either. Like, neither one of them are better or good or overarch the other, right? But I want to hear from your experience, what would you want an employer to do differently? Like, from your experience and how that corporate space made you feel, you know, that may have guided you towards entrepreneurship. Like, what would you want them to do differently? Or rather, what would you do differently now you're an entrepreneur and you're building your own team?
So I think I would let them explore different fields. So I will empower them rather than, you know, spoon feeding them. like it wouldn't be just that much work. So for example, if I think it's easier if I give you an example, like right. if I have a copywriter, so I just don't want them to do copywriting. Like I want them to explore all the areas, because then it would, like, I want to empower them, not just as a copywriter, but as a person in whole. So I think that would, what I would want to do. And to say, I think the primary reason would be keeping them happy. Like right. I wouldn't want to control their hours or how they want to work, because it's on them, like how they do it. But it's mostly like, I just want them to, like, because it's not that I'm a boss, you know, it's yeah. almost like collaboration. Like we are working towards creating something. I want them to feel happy, to like get up and like, even I want to feel like I cannot believe I get to work with this person, you know? I'm so
yeah.
happy. That's what I want.
I love that you said that, you know, because oftentimes, you know, when we are building teams or building our own empire, so to speak, we don't think of the assistants or the team members or, you know, persons who are ultimately under us as collaborators towards the work that we're doing or towards the end result. And also, what I love, the other point about what you said, is that oftentimes I think, you know, we often get caught up, because I speak to some of my corporate clients about this. We get caught up over how much time someone is putting in versus the value and the results, you know, and it's really about the results. Like, what is it that they're producing? Not necessarily how long it took them to produce it, you know? And we tend to compensate based on the time it took them to produce it as opposed to the result, how good that result was. That's amazing. That's an amazing insight in that regard. So for you, because I'm hearing how much of a leader you are, even in your own life. And I was just wondering, what does leadership mean to you? Like, what do you even see yourself as a leader?
I think I will say, like, an probably not a leader, but maybe I will say like an experiencing things, and then I'm creating things, and if I'm not sure, actually I'm not sure, maybe I'm a leader.
what do you think being a leader requires? Like, what do you think for you, like, who do you identify a leader to be, and what does it require to be just that?
Oh, I think my business coach, like Vanessa Lau and Mary Folio and all of these people, I think a leader is basically you experience certain things and you become an expert, and then you teach other people the same thing that you have experienced, because now right. you're like a step ahead. So now you're empowering other people of what you have learned and what you are empowered in. So I think that is what I feel as leader. In my case, what I want to do is like, I guess I am a leader because I also want to help people, because I know there are a lot of people who, basically what I want to do is I want to help my former self. So right. I know that my former self, if that person had someone like me, like someone who could coach them, who can pick them up, stand by their side, and like, you know, I'm there with you and I'm here to assist you, it would have been way, way easier than me figuring out and finally arriving at this position in my life at the moment. So I think that is what I'm trying to do with people, for people, that, I'm helping my former self.
I'm going to challenge you here, because you are a leader. I'm just putting that out there. Like, I'm going to challenge you here, man, because listen, even the thought of wanting to help others be better, and even your story in doing what you did is influencing others that you may not even know, or you may not even see them or interact with them, or even being here today, right? And sharing what you're sharing, you're influencing someone. And leadership is much more than wanting to help. Leadership is more about influencing others, whether good or bad, you know? And inspiring them. And I think you're doing just that. So I just want to let you know you're a leader and I want you to hold that and stay true to that, okay?
All right.
So for you, what challenges have you faced throughout your career? So not necessarily now as a coach, but generally, what challenges have you faced and how did you triumph in the end?
I think challenges during my corporate life, I used to have like a lot of differences. As I said, that I am a very, very value-oriented person. So if someone would ask me to write a news that is not ethical, that right. was a very problematic thing for me. So I will put my foot down and I would even tell them, like, you know, I don't want to get paid for this. It's okay, but I'm not going to do this. So I think I have like a lot of integrity thing, because I think as the business grows bigger, so your focus becomes more money, monetary. Like money oriented rather than like your value oriented. So that's or maybe because in countries where there's already scarcity of money, then you are like, you know, everything that you do is, because I also grew up in a household where, you know, there was a lot of scarcity mindset towards
right.
money. So everything was, every major decision in life was based out of like, you know, this will make you more money. So I think, so even in corporates, I could see the reflection of that. And then, yeah, it was all about earning money. And that is where you leave your value, you know, you leave your integrity. So I think that was the one factor where I faced a lot of challenge. And second thing that I faced is my mindset, because when I quit my job, I was like in a lot of repression, because, you know, I'm like, I don't have a job at the moment. What will I do? What is my next step? Like, at the moment I am at the peak career of my life, like my next step, like I would be earning a lot of money if I change my job. Look at my friends, they are earning so much. And I am the person who decides to like not do all
leave.
Of this and
suddenly. Yeah.
I think that was a lot of challenge. Plus, like in my, like my group, like my inner circle, I call it, all the people are not entrepreneurs, like, or let's say not even entrepreneurs. They're not doing something I'm doing, like not even a remote job. Like they go to job and they put in their hours and they come back. So for them, even my closest people, except my sister, for them to make, to understand that what I'm doing, why I quit, was really hard. But
right.
now so I've come a long way and they see, you know, me growing. Now they are able to understand, okay, like, you know. And in fact, like there are other people also who are trying to quit their jobs just because I did it, like my friends and all that. So I think I've caused a major effect.
But you see, you just gave an example of why you are a leader. Like, you have even influenced your friends to start thinking, wait, hang on, am I really happy doing this? You know, because the money is only one form of value, right? And oftentimes it doesn't fulfill us. It doesn't fulfill, I guess, our purpose as to what we should be doing in life. And that I think I want to, in a sense, circle back in a way, because I want to query to you. Would your 13-year-old self be proud of you today?
Oh, yeah.
And if so, why?
I think I never thought of older me. I thought, like, I would be very independent. And I don't remember what my 13-year-old thought. But I think she thought that I would be something, some person who would take their own decisions. They will have their life collected. But then she will look at me, she'll be like, she'll be hella proud of me. She'll be like, whoa.
And that is so good, you know, because I feel like we set a certain vision for ourselves when we are younger. And that shifts over time, like as a teenager, then as a young adult and so on. But we don't often look back to be like, wait, hang on. Would I really, really, you know, be proud of me? Like, did I actually live up to who I said I was going to be, you know, in the big scheme of things? And it's also interesting because we don't, maybe even reflect on last week versus years ago, right? Yeah. So do you think, where do you want to go? So that was 13-year-old self. She's looking at you today. She's proud. And this is you now looking into 2030. Where do you want to be in 2030? What does that look like?
So what will be my life like in 2030?
Yeah, what do you envision?
I think I would be financially independent. Like I will have achieved financial freedom by that time. Mm-hmm. And I would have a business that is made out of love. And right. I'm helping a lot of people. And I'm traveling around the world in my van.
Traveling around the world.
Writing books.
So, fun fact about you. Where would you, if you had no worries about money, no worries about time or energy, where is the first place you would go and why?
I think I would go to Japan.
Why?
Because I know about their culture a lot. And in Japan, there is this village called Ogimi. Mm-hmm. And Ogimi is famous for, it's one of the blue zones in the world.
Okay.
Like where people live longest, like the youngest person there is 88 years old.
Wow.
So in that village, people live longer because they live for their ikigai. So ikigai is a Japanese word, mm-hmm. which means like getting up I don't know, it's because there's not an exact translation, but in a rough meaning, it means that getting up, you have a reason to get up every day. So in that village, all of those people have something in their life that they ardently love. So
right.
It could be like a vegetable garden. So I want to go there because, you know, I want to see how they live for so long and how come they're so happy and how come they're like enjoying the life like that.
Yeah, drink from that fountain of youth, right?
Yeah.
So who is your ideal client? Like, what does that look like? Who would you, if you had an opportunity to work with anyone in the world, who would you want to lead to intention?
So I think I want to lead people who are conscious about, like, who want to make an impact to the world.
Right.
In the world. Like, they want to contribute something to the community, or they want to make life for the next generation better. And now, at the moment, they're stuck somewhere in their life. It could be, like, their entrepreneurship, or they can be an employee. But they're not happy doing what they're doing. So, I will come and fill the gap. Like, I will help them figure out how they can, like, you know, they can contribute to community. So I think I would like to help those people.
And how has it been as a woman being in this space? Like, I know, you know, there's many women, there's many men who are coaches, right? Running businesses, even in journalism, in your career and all the copy that you were doing. Like, how was it as a woman? Were there anything that you faced being a female in those spaces?
Like, as a coach at the moment, I'm meeting a lot of women. Like, my business coach is a woman. So I have not seen a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Plus, I think, like, because for the longest time, we had a lot of masculine energy into workforce. And now a lot of women are coming. So, like, feminine energy is more collaboration and more getting together, community. So I feel like belonged to, like whenever I'm talking to a women coach and all that, I haven't had a chance to talk to a man. Like, I think the only person I follow is Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
And that, like, he's far away. Like, I don't talk to him personally, but personally, whoever I've talked to have been very supportive. So I think that space has been very nice. But in terms of like my formal life, like my corporate life, I have faced like a barrier, like, you know, as a woman, because I've seen the thing that there's a pattern. Like, I could see like my men friends, like my friends who were copywriters, and they can like just go ahead and quote really high, and they would get paid like high amount. And for us, it was like, because I think women tend to have more imposter syndrome than because of our cultural molding. So we don't quote up to the mark. Like I have a lot of writer friends because I'm from that background, and all of the women, they undervalue themselves so much. They're always like, and then now since I've realized, because I'm at the other end, I'm like, I'm trying to motivate them, like, no, you need to quote more. So I think I was at that side. So I think I've always quoted less. Like I always was underpaid because I didn't have the courage to quote myself more. And I think office banter also have faced, like, you know, like the ma'am, what do you call, locker room talk.
Right.
I think that is also have faced it.
Why do you think that imposter syndrome happens though? Is there, why do you think, is there a fear? Do you feel like women would feel like their offer of worth will be rejected? You know, why do you think that happens innately, mostly in women than it might men?
I think it's because how we are culturally molded, because it's still very patriarchal everywhere. So women are like, even if the most liberal families and more equal families, there are traces where, you know, you see like, you make women submissive, even like passively. You won't see it very active, but passively in cultural traditions. And I'm from India, so it's very highly patriarchal. So I could see it like in front of my eyes still now, like how even in the smallest things, the way we talk, the language we use.
Right.
It is everywhere, like that submissiveness. Like it's basically because when you're born as a baby, it's no gender, you know. Gender is a societal construction. So if the same way how we raise a man or a boy, I think that would have made much more difference with our imposter syndrome, I feel like.
Because it's interesting. It's so interesting, you know, as I speak to more women around the world and I hear these stories, the same themes come out. Imposter syndrome seems to be a big one. Mindset seems to be a big one. And it's almost like you guys have been in each other's living rooms just having a chat about this whole thing, because everyone says it's so similar, right? But it's so true. You know, I've spoken to persons, you know, like you in India, persons in London, persons in Australia, like so just vast places around the world. And it's all coming down to the same thing. And I'm just wondering, you know, as women, what can we do? What do you feel like we can actually do as professionals across the board, no matter what culture we are part of, no matter where we are? What's maybe one little thing we can do to solidify that we are professionals, not female professionals? We are just professionals. Like what do you think that one thing is, if you have an idea? What can we do?
I think I have been actually thinking about this, like why, what is the difference? So I think I mentioned earlier as well, because for the longest time there was like high masculine energy in workspaces, and now a lot of feminine energy is coming. So I think I read this book written by Sheryl Sandberg. She is a CEO or CFO of Facebook. And she talks about how when she joined the office, there was not even a women's toilet in the department. So she talks about how like the spaces are still very masculine. So because, you know, like we work differently, our energies, the way we present ourselves are very different. So I feel like making it more feminine oriented, like workspaces professionally. So if we are leaders and if we are hiring people, making it more towards like what feminine energy is, I think that would work. And also make it more inclusive, like also involving a lot of men, because when we talk about women issues, women empowerment or anything, I think the second, like the biggest contributors are men. So we need to include them so that, you know, together we can solve or address this problem. This is just like women are talking. So I also feel like men should, now it's time that men should also join, and they need to understand that they also have a feminine energy. They also need to get in tune with their feminine side, you know. And it is so important for us because as we see like the world right now, because it's all rushed and the climate catastrophe. So we need more feminine energy. We need more nurturing. We need more collaboration, you know. I feel we need more compassion, you know, for each other. And that's what feminine energy is.
That's awesome. And I know that even with this word collaboration, you know, I've found that there's such a power that women are exuding at the moment, where we are being a little more vocal, we're being a little more present. You know, representation has really risen in terms of representing, so that even young girls can see representation in different spheres, in different careers, you know. But that word collaboration tends to create a dynamic that isn't usual, right? And I guess my next question would more so be along the lines of, how do you see women collaborating for the future? Like, okay, you've seen an increase in that, but what does that truly look like? Just in general, how can women collaborate, whether in a corporate job or as entrepreneurs or just in general as even mothers? Like, how do you see collaboration as a long-term goal for women?
I mean, right now what is happening at the moment, like, we are collaborating, we are inspiring others. So that is an example of collaboration. True. But in long term, I see like a lot of companies that were like a lot of women from different sectors and communities where women from different fields of career, like copywriting, travel, everywhere, they're coming together and, you know, empowering other people. So I think that could be, and I see that already, because I know that not so many, there are so many Facebook groups that I'm a part of, and that's how we met.
Yeah, true.
That I see like how everybody jumps on helping each other, which is just like a, like, you know, a small part of our future, because someone has a problem and everybody rushes to helping that person. So I think that is a massive collaboration. So I think it a figure is. Would be like really, really big. I think I cannot it imagine is. How it would be, but I think it's going to be something really great.
Yeah, and it's going to keep, I think it's going to keep playing on itself. It's almost like bricks on a foundation. They keep stacking up, right? So with that even in mind, tell us a little more about the upcoming projects that you have, because I know there's a few in the pipelines, especially the podcast. Tell us about that.
So for podcasts, I just released a podcast a week ago.
Nice.
My first travel podcast. It's about travel and meditation. So it is for, because this is a time we cannot travel, so I thought I would write something on travel. And I also, like, I promote meditation a lot. So I thought, like, you know, I will merge these two and create something. So I created a podcast. It's very relaxing, very calming. So that was the one project that I recently did. My second project would be launching my own Facebook group. So I'm creating an intentional community, getting all the people who are interested in a slow living, sustainability, experience-based life, and conscious entrepreneurship. I call it, like, conscious entrepreneurship.
Nice.
So yeah, that is my second project. Yeah, that is so far.
So a podcast. What's the name of that podcast?
It's called Journeying the Unknown.
Nice. So guys, you can check that out for sure. Make sure to listen out for that. And I think as we start to wrap up, one of my final questions would be, you know, for all that you've been doing over the past 2 years to really build the career that, or the, rather the life, not even the career, the life that you want to live, was one piece of advice? I mean, I'm sure there are women out there who are going to be listening. There are men out there who are going to be listening. There are different professionals in different stages of their life and career. And, you know, they may be stuck, or they may not be starting, or they may want to be growing a particular idea that they've had in the pipeline for years. What's that one piece of advice you would maybe give or leave with them that they can start to implement?
I think I would say listen to yourself. Listen to your heart because it knows where you want to go. Don't listen to your parents. Don't listen to your neighbors. Don't listen to your friends. Just listen to your heart and everything will follow. Like, you have this inner calling. And the second thing I would say is that enjoy the process. Like, don't jump on the results. Just enjoy your journey. Everything will happen as long as you listen to your heart. That these are the two things that I picked up from your life and has worked really well for me.
That is so good. You know why? It's one of those things. I really resonate with you saying, don't even listen to your parents. And in some instances, friends and family. Because, I mean, for years, kid you not, I, in building my company, I have multiple, but in building one of my entities, initially when I first started entrepreneurship, you know, you would have the family members who expect that a specific job and a specific career type and you know, especially after studying law, is like, no, you need to be in the court and you need to be, you know, your traditional attorney. And they would bring job clippings. Like, I'm like legit making money, right? I'm generating revenue, and they would still be bringing job clippings, you know, to kind of sway you into that. Because we have this misconception that a job means security. And I think even now, in light of COVID, in light of all that we are experiencing, I think it is very clear that a job does not mean security. Right. So what are your final thoughts on that in light of all that's been happening around the world? You know, what are your thoughts on creating the path, whether a job or entrepreneurship, creating that path that works for you? What's your thoughts on the security of any one career?
I think there's no security, to be honest. Like, it's just like, it's your understanding of the world. I feel like security can come from money. Security can come from having a partner or having family members and not having money. So I think it means differently for different people what exactly security is for them. But for me, I would feel like you need to thrive in life and you need to create your own life. And that's what will bring you security, because it's the mindset. Because when you start designing your life and you start following your heart's call, you don't think about security or you don't think about lack of anything. You're so focused that you empower yourself, you know, your vision empower yourself. So your everything else is background. So I think it is so important for you to find yourself, trusting yourself and just going ahead with whatever you want to do in life. And you will, you know, conquer everything, whatever comes your way.
Yeah. That's so good. Thank you so much for this. You have been awesome. It's been amazing chatting to you and hearing a different perspective from a different culture is so important to even bridge that gap, you know, bridge that gap and understand that there's not much differences. Like, we're literally experiencing the same things and going through the same challenges and triumphing in a lot of ways in the same way. So I thank you for even sharing. Where can we find you? Where can the listeners and viewers find you?
Oh, I have an Instagram channel and I have a podcast, so I can share the links with you. My Instagram channel is called Intentionally with Koss, but you might find spelling to be difficult, but I'll share both of my podcast and my Instagram with you. So that's where they can find me.
Awesome, Koss. So thank you so much. This has been Lead Her Shift. And we've really been delving into the different paradigms of feeling secure in our happy and understanding how our mindset plays a massive role in that. So this has been amazing. And until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.